Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two, live on this Tuesday on the early line on Sports Grid and why bury the lead. It's hour two. It's a recap of game number two of the 2024 Stanley Cup Final. So it's not just Ben. It's not just Donnie. Joe Maddon joins us live right here on this Tuesday on the early line on Sports Grid. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to be here on this Tuesday. A recap of game number two. The Panthers up 2-0 in the Stanley Cup Final. And so we project what the rest of this series might hold. Thanks for being here on this Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys, for having me on. That game last night, it was fantastic. If you're a Panthers fan, and if you're an Oilers fan, man, you've got to be waking up with a bad feeling this morning.
Yeah, it hasn't been great for Edmonton. They lose each of the first two games by a total of 6 goals combined. 3-0 in game one. Sergei Bobrovsky was fantastic. The man known as Bob, not bad yesterday. And it was tied entering the third period. And Edmonton actually scored first, the only goal in the opening period. And then Evan Rodriguez scored twice for Florida to start to pull the Panthers away as they win game number two, 4-1. Joe, what was the difference last night to give the Panthers another commanding win and a commanding 2-0 series advantage?
Yeah, the difference really was, Ben, that the rest of the Panthers showed up, not just Bobrovsky. Because when we looked at that first game, Bobrovsky stole them that game. Offensively and defensively, that team just wasn't there, even though you saw a box score of 3-0. That was Bobrovsky's win in game one. And looking at game two, the way the defense was able to come out and lock down all of the players of the Edmonton Oilers in that first and second period, these teams were not able to get those shots on goal. The Edmonton Oilers were completely limited out there on the ice. Everyone really thought Connor McDavid would come out flying last night, and he was only able to record 3 shots on goal. The Panthers' ability on the defensive side to really limit the Edmonton Oilers was absolutely fantastic. Offensively, this team showed up hard, hitting a physical game out there last night. And at the end of the day, the Florida Panthers played their game. They got Edmonton to play their game, and they solidified that win.
I'll tell you what was good about last night's game, which you watched yesterday. I tweeted out, said, you know what? Relaxing from RBI props. I want to take a look at my Oilers play some hockey. And apparently I'm not the only one here. 43% ratings increase this year for the Stanley Cup Finals. So they have our attention. There's plenty of superstars. We'll see how long this can go. But my question on this, Joe, is you have a 2-0 series lead by Florida. That's more than they could ask for. They love that going back to Edmonton. But also, can you speak on maybe Barkov getting injured late in that game and what that could possibly mean to the series if he's out for an extended period of time?
Johnny, this could be major trouble for the Florida Panthers out there. Barkov is one of the best two-way players out there on the ice, and him going out with that hit from Leon Draisaitl last night, we're unknown. We don't know when he's going to hit the ice. There's a lot of time in between game two and game three with game three on Thursday, but that was an absolutely nasty hit. From the look of it to myself, it looked like an elbow straight to the jaw, and we'll see how his jaw is doing. We know players will play through a lot, but a dislocated or broken jaw out there, I really can't see him playing if it is broken, which honestly, that will be a huge difference. And I do think Edmonton will be able to pick up a win without Barkov on the ice in game three. He's all over Connor McDavid out there. And like I said, he plays both sides of the puck. He's absolutely fantastic. And he's a huge difference maker for the Florida Panthers. So the Panthers without him will absolutely have their hands full. And I could see Edmonton taking game three if that's the case.
Yeah, Joe, you detailed for us in previewing this series, and one of the key matchup advantages is the style of hockey that Florida plays, incredibly physical for the Panthers. Last night, though, it was the veteran, Evan Rodriguez, netting two goals to start off the third that really pulled the Panthers away and said goodnight to the Oilers for that 4-1 victory. But not just Evan Rodriguez, not just the four goals scored yesterday by Florida. Sergei Bobrovsky has been sensational once again. Bob, 32 saves, a perfect clean sheet in game number one. Last night only faced 19 shots, but did save 18 of the 19. And now with Florida up 2-0 as we head to Edmonton for game number three on Thursday, and the Panthers a hefty favorite to win Lord Stanley's Cup, Sergei Bobrovsky an odds-on favorite to win the Conn Smythe, the playoff or Stanley Cup final MVP. Joe, do you believe that Bobrovsky is worthy of a minus money price? And if not, who else would you might take a flyer on?
You know what? When I look at Bobrovsky, absolutely. He's been able to get two shutouts so far in the playoffs, and who's to say he won't get a third out there on the ice? These defenses have been phenomenally strong in front of him for the Florida Panthers, and I do think that Bobrovsky, he deserves it if they're able to get there. He's been able to hang in all of these playoff games. He's only had one really bad one out there where you kind of go, how did Bobrovsky let that in? But that goal last night that the Edmonton Oilers scored on him in that first period was right through his five hole. That's something we're normally not seeing. Bobrovsky is so strong at protecting that five hole. I absolutely think he deserves it. And that note on Rodriguez being able to get the two goals, Ben, do you realize that was on two shots on goal only that he was able to get? So absolute fire last night.
Yeah, we're taking a look at those Conn Smythe odds. And also, yes, you're right about that questionable goal that Bobrovsky gave up. And also, it's a perfect game plan for Edmonton. You wanted to get that breakthrough goal here on the road to go up 1-0. And then four unanswered goals here by Florida. We'll see how it plays out with the Conn Smythe trophy. But if you're Edmonton, you need some of your big guns to start firing here to get you back into that series. So if we take a look, Joe, at the updated series prices here, Florida's a heavy favorite. It's no surprise. A minus 500 price to win the series. If you're still digging Edmonton, you can get a plus 375. If we take a look at the spread in the series, Florida -2.5 games, Edmonton +2.5 games. Any one of those, is it just so simple that Florida should win this series, or is there some buyback opportunities here for the Oilers, Joe?
You know what? If you have hope that the Edmonton Oilers can get another win here, you're getting the value right now. We don't know what's happening with Barkov, so I do think grabbing them plus the 360, especially if you already took the Florida Panthers to win it all before this series kicked off, you've got a nice hedging position here. I do think, though, Florida is going to win this. I'm really hoping Edmonton is able to push it deep at least. We want a nice competitive Stanley Cup Finals. We don't want to see the sweep. At least I don't, even though I'm riding with the Florida Panthers. I do think it'd be nice to see Edmonton stay competitive in this one. But at the end of the day, you guys, you've lost all the value on the Florida Panthers unless you got them before this series kicked off.
Yeah, Joe, we see the same thing in the NBA Finals with Boston up 2-0 and Florida up 2-0. Both teams had home floor and home ice advantage. So it's not crazy to see that team take that commanding 2-0 series lead. But in two series, we expected to be competitive, to see at least six games, maybe even go the full duration of seven. It does feel a little bit fleeting, where now the team that is booked as the underdog has to win four of the next five games if they are going to end a champion, where it seems the Celtics and the Panthers certainly in line to hoist that title. But maybe it gets competitive. Joe, how many more games do we see here in the 2024 Stanley Cup Final? We got to get you to game six at Rogers Place.
We've got to get to game six, but I've got a gut feeling, sinking gut feeling, this only goes to five. That's coming in at plus 235. Edmonton, it's such a hard place to play in, and you've heard Connor McDavid saying, I can't wait for everyone to doubt us again. He's going to be fired up. So look for the best out of Connor McDavid here in game three. But Edmonton will collapse. If they're not able to win game three, this team will fall apart out there on their ice. Their fans are absolutely brutal. The booing that will come at home if they lose that game three, it's going to be nasty, you guys. So for Edmonton's sake, I hope they're able to get the win in game three there.
Listen, a couple of days off before game three in the change of venue. It's a long trip from Sunrise, Florida, all the way up to Edmonton, Alberta. And game three is on Thursday. Edmonton is booked as a home ice favorite at minus 135. Joe, as always, thank you for the sensational breakdown for the Stanley Cup Final. We appreciate the time.
And thanks, you guys. Appreciate you having me on.
From the Cup Final down to North Carolina for the 2024 U.S. Open in Pinehurst. Up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
To North Carolina we go. The third major championship of this season in golf. The 2024 United States Open, our country's national championship, this week at Pinehurst number two, where we find Keith Stewart, who joins us live right here on this Tuesday on the early line from the grounds there in the Tar Heel State. Keith, as always, we appreciate the time and thank you for being here on the early line.
Guys, it's fantastic to be here for our national championship. It's already hot. The air is heavy down here and we're not even to the weekend yet.
So, Keith, anytime we talk about a golf event, especially a major championship, we must start at the top. Scottie Scheffler, a victory last week at the Memorial where you were in Dublin, Ohio, his fifth win in his last eight events. A heater we have not seen in probably at least 22 or 23 years in PGA Tour history. So Scottie Scheffler takes that mantle as the world's best golfer into the third major championship of this season. And the price, Keith, the price for the toughest test in golf, the United States Open, is a 3-1 number. How do you describe the expectation level for Scottie Scheffler this week at Pinehurst number two?
The expectations are A, don't get arrested, and then B, come home with the national championship. I mean, in his last five starts, he's got three wins and he's got 2 seconds. I mean, the guy's unbelievable. At this point, last week was at Memorial, the way Sunday played, only three guys shot under par. That was a preview for the U.S. Open, and he still won. He won with a triple bogey on Sunday. It's just, it's uncanny at this point. We're getting back to these days of where we used to see Tiger at such short odds, and you felt like, oh boy, I have to bet Tiger, and he's 2-1, or Scottie's now 3-1. It's a really, really difficult betting proposition, but I do have a plan for you.
Ooh, that's a nice little teaser coming up for us. But before we get to that plan, what's the plan for these golfers trying to attack Pinehurst number two? Because we, as we understand the U.S. Open, it's not built to say, let's go 10, 15, 20 under par. It's a true test of golf. What are the expectations this week for the golf course itself here, Keith?
Well, Pinehurst number two is one of those just classic designed golf course. There's no one signature hole. It's a test from start to finish. I mean, we have one water hazard on the whole property, and it doesn't even come into play. This is just sand and grass and dirt, and it is going to test these guys mentally and physically. And I'm going to start with the mental side. For the skills that I think you need this week, and this is why Scheffler is such a favorite, is that he is the best guy when it comes to cerebral golf. That's why he has such an advantage at Augusta National and why he has such an advantage here or a place like the Players. These golf courses that really, really test your patience and your ability to just kind of fire at the center of the green and take scoring when it comes, these guys are so good, they can't help but act aggressively. And when they do act aggressively, you need somebody with great total driving. The only change in the golf course since 10 years ago for the 2014 U.S. Open here, they didn't add length. They didn't add any extra new tee boxes. They planted more wiregrass, which is the bingo card word of the week you're going to hear in coverage. And they put it more in these sandy, barren areas to ensure that it becomes more of a penalty should you miss the fairway. The second thing is that about 60% of your approach shots are coming in from over 175 yards. Very similar to the test last week at Memorial. Very similar to the test at Valhalla, although that played soft. And this is already firm and fast on a Monday, and we expect a lot of high sun, high heat down here, and no rain. So this place is going to get really even more firm and fast. And the third thing is that everyone's going to notice these turtleback greens. They reject approach shots. And when that happens, you're going to have very, very tight lies and all sorts of bunker lies and sandy situations around these greens. You have got to be a master with the wedge. You've got to be a great around the green player in order to save par or even score on some of these par fives from close range. Those are my three keys for this week.
The last U.S. Open contested at Pinehurst number two back in 2014, as Keith said, Martin Keimer victorious, lapping the field by eight, nine under par, but only two other guys were under par for the entirety of all 72 holes. So, Keith, as we talk about world number one, Scottie Scheffler, you mentioned you had a plan. You gave us the plan of attack for the golf course this week and the track in North Carolina. What is the plan if you want to wager on Scottie Scheffler?
Well, you can only go one of two routes. You know, I lived this life years ago when you used to bet on Tiger and he would come into a major and he was 2-1. Either go Tiger and you can go single shot, or you can go a full card against him. But you can't have the best of both worlds. Now, last week we missed it. We should have probably taken Scotty at those short odds and just went with one bet on him as an outright. But you know what? You can't do that in a U.S. Open. Look what happened with the ladies a couple weeks ago and how everybody ejected on day one. A lot of luck is always involved in a U.S. Open. 15 of the last 19 U.S. Open men's winners have, that has been their first major championship, right? This is the number one player in the world on a heater, but you know what? A U.S. Open doesn't set up for that. He's going to get a bad break at some point this week, and then it's how can he deal with it? And that might be the difference with him winning or losing. And at such short odds and luck being a factor and the USGA running these crazy tournaments, I won't take that chance. I'm going to go with a couple other early leans.
If we take a look here at some of those early leans, that could be maybe Tiger Woods at 350-1 to win this tournament here. How does Tiger Woods set up at Pinehurst number two? Because we always hear about it's going to be a lot of walking. What are we looking at for Tiger Woods this week?
Well, Donnie, it's the best walking so far that we've had for Tiger, maybe since the Open Championship at St. Andrews. It's very flat here, and he can handle that. It's also going to be warm, which is good for his back and all his sore bones and muscles and everything else that he has a challenge with. But the fact of the matter is, in the last 2.5 years, we've had a 47th, a missed cut, a 45th, a 60th, and a mixed cut. I don't even know that we can bet Tiger anymore in the make or miss cut market. We need to see that trend change, and I'm hopeful with the flat terrain and the warm weather that we're going to get something great out of Tiger this week.
So, Keith, 40 seconds left. Tiger probably not in the early leans. Give us some other names to pay attention to this week of the U.S. Open.
The only guy that's on a close heater to Scotty, and that is Morikawa. So we need a miracle down here in Pinehurst number two from him. He has a third, a ninth, a 16th, a fourth, and a second. That was runner-up to Scotty last weekend. And the second guy, if you need some magic beans around these greens, I'm going with Cam Smith. He grew up on the sand belt down there in Australia, which is just like Pinehurst number two.
Keith, We appreciate the time. Enjoy the week in North Carolina. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Some NFL news in notes. Just because it's the offseason, just because it's early June, does not mean we do not have news to bring you around the National Football League. Mandatory minicamp going on around the NFL and a contract extension. We brought you contract extension news over the past week, but this not for a player, this for a longtime head coach. In fact, now the longest tenured head coach in the National Football League after Bill Belichick, no longer working in New England. That mantle is passed to Mike Tomlin, 17 years at the helm of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it's not done there. Entering year number 18, which was his final under contract in the Steel City, the Steelers organization adds on a three-year contract extension. That would seem to me, Donnie, we're going to get two decades of Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh.
And you should. And you should be happy if you're a Steelers fan, because the one thing that you do know at the beginning of every season, you will be competitive and you're going to get some really good sound bites. There's no question that he's a solid coach in the NFL, but sometimes we take a look at the records, which are very good, Ben. 173-100, 11 playoff appearances, and the key ingredient, once again, no losing seasons. Here's the issue, though. In the NFL, a lot of the times, it's really what have you done for me lately? Sure, we can look at that record in the losing season and even say, you know what, man? He won a Super Bowl championship. Good for him. That Super Bowl was back in 2009. We're entering into the 2024 season. So expectations for a Steelers organization that's one of the most, you know, bountiful, we should say, in NFL history with winning championships hasn't really been on that timeline of, yes, we're expecting a Super Bowl this year. Solid team nonetheless. We'll see what Russ gives out, but it's a no-brainer for the Steelers. Were they going to let Mike Tomlin go into the final year of his contract as a lame duck head coach? That absolutely wasn't happening. No. So you had to give him the extension, right. And we're pretty sure next year the Steelers, once again, just like they've been under Mike Tomlin for the past 17 seasons, will be competitive.
I'm not going to bet against the Pittsburgh Steelers to finish below 500. Yeah. I'm not going to bet against the Pittsburgh Steelers to finish with less than 8 wins, something they have never done in 17 years under Mike Tomlin. Heck, I might even sprinkle on a plus money price in a competitive AFC North and a competitive conference as a whole for the Steelers to see the postseason once again. They made the playoffs last year, and Mason Rudolph was their quarterback. Russell Wilson is going to be a better quarterback for Pittsburgh than the Steelers have had probably in the last 4 years, and that includes the final 2 years of Ben Roethlisberger's tenure in the Steel City when he could barely even move around the pocket. I know Russ did not work out in Denver, but it wasn't all on Russ. And frankly, Russell Wilson was pretty good last year in Mile High. Now, with that being said, it's a really intriguing debate, Donnie, in my estimation. I have it often with the Iowa Hawkeyes, a team that is consistently successful. And for that, you are grateful. For that, as a fan, you are thankful. But there is a certain cap on your overall potential. There is a certain ceiling that is placed on your success. Yeah, you're going to win, and you're going to win games, and you might finish with a winning record. But are you a true AFC contender? Are you a true contender for that Lombardi Trophy? I don't think anybody would argue that for the Steelers as of this moment. So is it enough in the Steel City? And then in a weird de facto way, do you place yourself in limbo? Never bad enough to need to make an overhaul or a change, but never quite good enough from claiming the ultimate prize.
No, and that's the tough point about it, because you can say as an organization, you got exactly what you wanted out of your football coach. We are always competitive, technically always in it, but also one of those football teams that at the beginning of the season, it's very rare where you point to the Pittsburgh Steelers and go, you know what? I think that team can make a run and win a Super Bowl, Ben. As you pointed out also, it's not as if you're playing in the AFC South where it's like, hey, the upstart Houston Texans, we just need to take care of them. You're going to play the Baltimore Ravens, one of the best teams in football. You're going to take on the Cincinnati Bengals if they get their wide receivers in line. That's going to be a tough out. And the Cleveland Browns expecting big expectations out of their quarterback and also have a very good and talented football team start to finish on offense and defense. So this is not going to be an easy season in division here. If they can win that division, they'll certainly be tested once they get to the playoffs. But it's always, what have you done for me lately in a championship-driven organization? It's been a long time, which we were favored, talking about the Steelers, to win an NFL championship.
When you look at the Steelers, Mike Tomlin came on with such strong success as a young coach. As Donnie said, they won a Super Bowl in the 2008 NFL campaign. They played in a Super Bowl 2 years later in 2010. But the last time that Pittsburgh has even appeared in a conference championship game in the AFC, 2016, now nearly a decade ago. But Mike Tomlin extended, probably should see 2 decades at the helm of this Steelers organization. You know who's not going anywhere at the helm of UConn? That's Dan Hurley. We talk about it more next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Couldn't get any texts yesterday, huh? that UConn's practice was delayed until 2 p.m. Eastern time, that we couldn't get some news before the news of Dan Hurley's decision. I kid James Young. Our coach is here to debate whether the coach of Connecticut made the right call. We thought J.Y. might have been an assistant in stores. Instead, he joins us here on this Tuesday on Sports Grid, which we are glad for. So, J.Y., thanks for being here once again.
Good to be on with you. Yeah, I guess $100 million, $70 million sounds like the same thing. Maybe not.
Yeah, interesting reporting in terms of the contract news that we will debate here as part of Dan Hurley's decision. But let's start with the ultimate decision. Dan Hurley is not going to become the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Dan Hurley will remain at UConn. So, J.Y., what do you think led to the decision for Dan Hurley not to go to L.A. and stay in stores?
You know, honestly, loyalty. And I think that was the one thing that I did hear, that he was wrestling with back and forth. And he did wrestle with this even when he left URI. There's reports that he's supposed to get offered the Rutgers job. He was going to take it, not take it, take it, not take it, decide not to take it. When he left to go from URI to UConn, he hemmed and hawed back and forth. No one knew. So what I was told is he kept everybody in the dark. I think what it came down to is this. He sat down with Andrea, because we all know when you are a coach, the wife rules the roost. That is the most important person, because at the time that you are away, it's a long season in the NBA, road trips, so on and so forth. So I think what it came down to is it just didn't make sense for him. I think his legacy means a lot. This is a chance for him to build something at UConn that could put him in the names of the Krzyzewskis, in the names of the Woodens, in the names of the Bob Knights, that Mount Rushmore, whatever you call it, of college basketball. But also, I think what it does is, by the way, shout out to Kevin Walsh. Me and Ben debated this, that the center of the college basketball universe was UConn. I guess we proved that it was right, because they won two national championships and the coach did not leave to go to the Lakers. So that's a little at Kevin Walsh. So me and Ben have that from the NCAA tournament. Sorry, K-Dub, but facts are facts. But when it comes down to it is, you also look at Mr. Hurley, how long he was at St. Anthony, how many jobs he was offered, and he never turned his back on that. I think the players, the university, the fact that it's in the Northeast, and maybe not enough money was to get him to the West, especially Andrea.
Now, if we're taking a look at the Lakers organization, I believe they did UConn such a service here, Coach, because even though this didn't happen, the ramifications, we're taking a look at Hurley moving from UConn over to the Lakers. What would have happened here? And you say to yourself, you know what? I get it here. He is very loyal to the university. If that money was right, he would be going to L.A. But if it was similar, there was no way he was leaving UConn, because this wasn't a thing from his agent, Coach, right? When they won the national championship, you know what? Pay me. I'm going to the NBA, and I'm going to stretch this out to make sure I get a new deal. This came out of left field with the Lakers handpicked him as the successor they wanted to have as their coach. Are you surprised? And again, we're talking about money that we're never going to make. 6 years, $70 million, which is a ton. But I was surprised that that price point was so low, because if you were going to get the two-time reigning national championship coach in the middle of the summer, knowing if he leaves, that transfer portal opens and UConn is ruined at that point, it better be for a lot of money. Talk about the financials here for the Lakers. And why do we think it was so low at this point? And did they think they would get him at that such a low price?
They must have felt like the allure of the Lakers and the allure of LeBron James was going to be enough to offer him only $70 million. Got to remember, folks, I think Monty Williams, if I'm not mistaken, makes more than he. And if I'm looking at Dan Hurley, I'm saying, this guy makes more than – you're going to offer him less money than what – and I, when I've won two national championships, you're going to say, well, he hasn't done it in the NBA. So what? Don't give me that. If you want Dan Hurley and you fly him out there, you better close it. And I'm not talking about Armando Benitez or Brandon Looper. I'm talking about Mariano. You close it. Yeah, and if it came down to yesterday or the day before, if you wanted it bad enough, you go do it. I wonder how much of this also is you're going to get LeBron James at 39. You're not getting LeBron James at 29. That's the other thing. And also the fact of is this team, what are the Lakers? I know we'll get into it. Are they like – Are they a championship team? Or are they a rebuilding team? Is it LeBron's team? Is it AD's team? Is it Bronny's team? There's so many factors that unless you put pen to paper and gave them way, I know, I like the Bronny thing, unless you offer way more money, he wasn't, it makes sense now that he didn't sign it.
I think we start that narrative. The Los Angeles Lakers are Bronny's team.
That would be very good.
And JY, we will focus on LA in what the next few weeks hold for the Lakers, because now they have to hire a head coach when it almost seemed like a done deal for Dan Hurley, and an NBA draft that is looming where Bronny James might take over the mantle of running Hollywood. But before we get to LA, I think you brought up a great point. You and I, some college basketball guys, Donnie Wrightside, every now and then come the month of March. And the best coach in college basketball remains in college basketball. Dan Hurley is one of 17 coaches all time in D1 history in men's college hoops to win multiple national championships. He is one of 8 all time to win back-to-back national titles. He is one of 7 active men's Division I college basketball head coaches to even have one national title, let alone being one of the 3 active head coaches to win multiple national championships. And so he can add on to a growing and budding legacy that already puts him in the pantheon in college basketball history. What is Dan Hurley, when all is said and done, going to accomplish during his tenure in Connecticut?
Unbelievable things, man. And if I'm the Big East, I'm pissed. I mean, this was their chance to get rid of the guy and make it a little bit more even, I guess you could say. Here's the thing. He's only 53 years old. This guy's career is just starting, Ben. He's got another 10, 15 years left. And with his background, with his name, with the respect, like, here's one thing I always say about Dan I love. He's the type of coach that will get in your face during a game and hug you after the game. He's the kind of coach that will yell at you and then tell you how to fix it. He's got a way with his kids. So when you look at him on the sideline and see him going nuts, the kids love it because they know he's got their back. Unlike a coach that we're going to talk about in the third segment, coaching Indiana Fever. But when you talk about it, I think Dan is so perfect for college basketball. And let's be honest, they need him. But this, like I says, this speaks to the fact of the college versus the pro game. The Lakers could not land Dan Hurley. I think Dan's going to do great things, and it's great for college basketball. It's great for Northeast basketball, and it's great for the Big East.
And also, take a look at UConn next year. Like, I think, obviously, you're coming off back-to-back national championships. The expectations are always going to be high. But the fact that he's back now, it feels like such a big win for UConn when a month ago, we never expected him to leave in the first place. I think this team is going to be even more galvanized. Like, coach really loves us here. Let's go out and see if we can get 3 in a row now.
Yeah, and listen, we can't bet against them. I know they're going to be top 5 in the country in their preseason in regards to betting favorite. You know why they're a betting favorite? It's because of Dan Hurley. They don't have the most talent coming back. They don't have the best roster coming back, but they got the best coach coming back. And what a coach in the NCAA tournament, especially that second day, that second game within 48 hours, that's where coaches can win games and steal games. Dan Hurley can ever bet him to win, not bet against him to win a national championship.
There's a lot of roster turnover. It's a new era in college hoops and college athletics starting next year. But UConn does return some talent, and UConn's got some new talent now, all to be put in line by the madman that we love in Dan Hurley. So he stays in stores. What the heck do the Lakers do? We'll talk about it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So Dan Hurley says no to Los Angeles. He will remain at UConn. So what do the Lakers do? At this point a week ago, it seemed as though the Lake Show had zeroed in. Those were the words of FanDuel TV's Shams Charania on J.J. Redick to become the next head coach of the LA Lakers, which seemed rather fitting. He was one of the rumored candidates that was leading the coaching search in Los Angeles. Then Dan Hurley comes out of nowhere and readjusts expectation. So JY, he's not going to be the next head coach. That is Dan Hurley of the LA Lakers. Who do you think the next head coach of the Lakers is going to end up being?
By the way, shout out to our FanDuel brother, Sham Sharania, because I feel like Woj kind of jumped in quick with this little, you know, Dan Hurley thing and kind of got it wrong a little bit. So shout out to Shams. If you are the Lakers, honestly, I think you're embarrassed because this is what you guys have been. We were talking about Rec the whole time and Borrego. And then all of a sudden, Dan Hurley comes out of left field. He comes all the way out there and he flies home and he doesn't answer on Friday. Doesn't answer on Saturday. Supposed to answer on Sunday. Push it back to Monday. And you don't go out and give him what you want. Did they really want Dan Hurley? Or was this a smokescreen to make the Lakers feel like they're doing their due diligence and going outside the box? There's so many questions to answer with the Lakers. But for me, I guess you have to pivot to JJ. But here's the crazy thing. All the leverage in the world is now with J.J. Redick. You got to admit it. He's got all the leverage because he was supposed to get the job. Then they pivoted to Hurley. Hurley says no. If I'm J.J. Redick and I'm sitting back there, I'm saying, well, that six-year, $70 million deal looks pretty enticing to me. You know, I think you have to come up a couple of million dollars a year to get me to go coach there because he was the rumored guy and now he isn't. So for the Lakers, I think it's an embarrassment. And the Lakers that has been known as an iconic franchise, iconic doesn't add up if you don't pay the money. You got to still pay to play. So you can't get a Laker discount. You got to pay what these guys are worth. And for Dan Hurley, really quick, that was supposed to be offered around the same amount of money per year for Kentucky, and he said no. They just thought that you offered the same amount per year, and he would say yes to them. Bad move by the Lakers entirely.
It's such a terrible, terrible look for the Lakers. Now, answer me this question. Like, if we were led to believe all along was J.J. Redick, was there something where they didn't like at this point? You're like, why didn't he already get made head coach at this point? Also, the leap to Dan Hurley and then saying, okay, well, we really don't want J.J. Redick to be our coach. We really want Hurley. Let's just not offer him a lot of money. Then pivot back to J.J. Redick. How can the Lakers save face and go back to J.J. Redick? Because those questions, coach, all next year – 3-game losing streak, 4-game losing streak, trying to get into the playing rounds. Well, JJ, they didn't want you anyway here. How are you going to resurrect this basketball team? How do you move forward with JJ Redick knowing he wasn't even the first choice here at this point now?
That's the question. And that's why if you're the Lakers, when you pivot off of Redick, you have to get Hurley. Like you have to close it. And if that means you have to offer him the reported $100 million or $110 or $120, whatever. You offer whatever you have to get Hurley, and then if it says no, then you can say, well, we did everything we could to get him. That is what the dilemma is now with the Lakers. So now if you're J.J. Redick, you sit back and you can take a lot of different ways. Man, they really didn't want me that bad. Or maybe it was just LeBron wanted me, and maybe AD doesn't want me. But at the end of the day, and it's interesting how, like, Woj is kind of going with, they're going to restart the search, but they're still going to look at Redick and Borrego. What recycled coach are we bringing back? We're going to send Steve Clifford to the Lakers? I mean, is he next? Like, come on, man. Like, this is Mike D'Antoni? Jock Vaughn? I mean, come on now. Like, the NBA needs at some point to turn this league over and give guys a chance. I don't want Borrego. Give the money to Redick if that's what you want, or if you want someone that has no head coaching experience. I know you're nervous about Darvin Ham. I'm a big believer in Sam Cassell. I love him as a player. I think he's done great things, both with Philadelphia and then obviously with Boston now. I think he would be someone to consider. You got to open up, but I just don't want the recycled coach on the third, fourth, fifth job.
Listen, there is a guy reportedly helping with the coaching search in Los Angeles who used to coach J.J. Redick, who used to coach LeBron James, a member of U.S. Olympic basketball. his name, Mike Krzyzewski. I'm not saying, just maybe keep it in mind. If Coach K wants the glory once again in Los Angeles, I would expect all of the money in the world to try to lure J.J. Redick. But I think the reporting has been fascinating for L.A. When Dan Hurley was considering the move, and when I say when, that was, of course, on Thursday and Friday, it was the luster of L.A. It was the prestige of this Lakers franchise, being one of the biggest brands in basketball. But some further reporting has pretty much detailed how the Buss family, now under Jeannie Buss as the governor of the Lakers, is actually a little bit cash-strapped as an organization group, and they don't have all the money to back up the illustrious name that is Los Angeles. And we see that in the reported contract for Dan Hurley, only 6 years, 70 mil, not even making him one of the top five highest paid head coaches in the NBA. So Jay Wine, the final minute of this segment, a big 2 weeks looms for LA. They have to hire a new head coach, and the NBA draft is 2 weeks from tomorrow, where the Lakers are the favorites to draft Bronny James. Will the Lakers have a head coach by draft night, and what will the decision be?
Cash-strapped organization. Got a looming guy that can leave the organization in LeBron James. They're going to do, ready, whatever the heck LeBron wants. LeBron wants JJ? They're going to get JJ. They're going to have to pay JJ. And they're going to get Bronny James. At the end of the day, whether we like it or not, LeBron James is a bigger name than the Lakers right now, and he's going to hold them hostage.
So we couldn't get James Young in stores. Maybe we get him in Los Angeles. I think we've got a chance to get him in Indianapolis for the Fever. We'll talk about it up next, live right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Only one WNBA game played last night between the Indiana Fever and the Connecticut Sun. So when one team is 10-1 and the other team is 3-10, it should not be a surprise to see the home team, the Sun, booked as a 10.5-point favorite, cover that spread and win by 17. But of course, there are larger picture ramifications from another large defeat for Indiana and what the future holds for the Fever. Only on the basketball floor. We can highlight Connecticut in just a moment. But last night, some interesting words for Indiana's head coach, Christy Sides, after the game was done, because a lot of her starters, including Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston, did not play much, if at all, in the second half of a blowout at Mohegan Sun. Christy Sides said the effort just wasn't there on the defensive end of the floor. In quote, "You can't coach effort," end quote. But you are the coach, Christy, so maybe do something. JY, what was your reaction to the comments made by Christy Sides and another large defeat for Indiana last night against Connecticut?
Very simply put, when players are, you don't think a team is ready to play, sometimes as a coach, use the thumb and look at yourself and look at the fact that, yes, you got jumped. You were down 11 points after the first quarter. So what can you do as a coach? You adjust. What'd you do? Lost by 9, second quarter. What'd you do in the third quarter? Lost by 4. They lost by 17, and it wasn't even that close. You're down 20 at the break. You've given up 55 points to a team that's 11th in pace in the WNBA. As a coach, you have to do a better job of getting your team prepared to play. And this is the second time. You know what, Ben? I'm sorry. This is the third time Christy Sides just opened up her mouth and said something that I wouldn't have done. Comments last night. The woke up the monster Caitlin Clark thing she said on, I think, Saturday morning after she didn't make the Olympic team. Right? And then the comments a couple weeks ago when she told the players, especially Caitlin Clark, don't talk to the referees. I'll handle it. Ben, I'm sorry. And it's hard for me as a coach to get after another coach. I just don't see this team being competitive. And that's coaching. you have to wonder with a team with Boston, with Clark, with Mitchell, with Smith, those are four bona fide, really good players. And Caitlin Clark is struggling at times, and the other three are getting worse than last year. That's coaching. And I think there needs to be a talk of a change in Indiana.
And also, you take a look at, you know, texting your head coach. Yeah, you're going to text some things that you probably don't think would get out there, but the head coach is like, yeah, just got a text from him. He said it woke a monster. Like, oh, here we go. So now you know you already have that eyes on the Connecticut Sun. Go, oh, let's see what this monster has. 10 points, 2 assists, no rebounds, 2 3-point shots made, and they blew them off the court, which then takes me to take a look at Rookie of the Year, probably not up for grabs. It's Clark, heavy favorite here at a -850 price. Brink at a 9-1 price. Angel Reese at a 13-1 price. She's still going to be the runaway Rookie of the Year here, regardless of what happens the rest of the way, Coach, we could probably say.
Yeah, she's still going to win it because she's going to have the usage rate and the stats. I want one thing people understand, one thing really quick about Christy Sides that they don't know. Last year, her first year, was the first time Christy Sides had ever been a head coach at any level, high school, Division I, overseas, and now the WNBA. I don't think people understand the difference. And I had to do it a couple times, from going from that second chair to the first chair. There's so many different things you got to think about. And I think the lady, honestly, is over her head. And you have Lynn Dunn, who is one of the best coaches in the history of the WNBA, that runs that franchise. Lynn, either sit her down and talk to her, take your behind, go to the bench and sit next to her, or get rid of her and start over. Because the last thing the WNBA needs for marketability is the best and most popular player in the league getting her doors blown off, game in, game out.
And that has happened here, despite Caitlin Clark herself statistically off to historic starts once again. The fastest player in WNBA history ever to 200 points and 75 assists, doing so in her first 12 games. A triple header in the W tonight. I'll have some plays for it. JY, quickly here, anything you like?
Yeah, I like the Dream minus the points. Also, Sparks plus 11, playing a lot better.
The Aces also need to wake up a little bit, too. They've dropped two in a row, JY. Thank you. Hour three next.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.